ABC Listen. Podcasts, radio, news, music, and more.
Good evening and welcome to PM. I'm Samantha Donovan, coming to you from the lands of the Wurundjeri people of the Kulin Nation in Melbourne. Tonight, the Iranian regime's brutal crackdown on protesters leaves thousands dead. Also, Bill and Hillary Clinton refused to appear before a congressional inquiry into the late pedophile Jeffrey Epstein. And the 16-year-old Sydney boy who's announced himself to world soccer with a goal for one of Italy's biggest teams.
Proprio per arena! Incredibile! Incredibile!
It was pretty awesome to see him score, and not gonna lie, I was pretty jealous as well, because that's every young kid's dream, and he's doing it, which is great.
First this evening, the death toll from nationwide anti-government protests in Iran has climbed to more than 2,500 people, according to activists. But around the world, there are fears the actual toll is far higher. The security forces of the Islamic Republic are cracking down on the protesters at the direction of the regime's supreme leader, Ayatollah Ali Khamenei. The government has been in power since the monarchy of the Shah of Iran was overthrown in 1979. The US President Donald Trump is encouraging protesters to continue their fight and has implied that American intervention in Iran is imminent. Rachel Hayter prepared this report.
Despite a five-day internet blackout, the extent of the Iranian regime's bloody crackdown on protesters is becoming clearer. Among the victims, a 23-year-old woman reportedly shot at close range from behind. Her uncle told the ABC when her parents went to Tehran to identify her body. They saw the bodies of hundreds of young people who'd been murdered.
All of them were between 18, 19 to until 24. And most of them had been shot in the neck and head. And face.
The US-based Human Rights Activists News Agency has so far verified the deaths of more than 2,500 people.
Everything that we produce as verified information has been confirmed with a primary source inside of the country.
The agency's deputy director, Skylar Thompson, warns the actual death toll is far higher as the communications blackout limits the number of deaths that can be verified.
This is an unprecedented internet shutdown. It's not just the internet framework. It's also all domestic communication channels, including mobile telephone lines and even landlines.
The unrest started in late December as protests against the government's failure to rein in soaring inflation. But the demonstrations now oppose the regime more broadly. The United Nations has heard reports of raids by the Iranian authorities on hospitals and the use of tear gas inside medical facilities. Iranian-British activist Negin Shirakai today spoke with her 80-year-old mother inside Iran, who's angry at the bloodshed.
She's seen a lot of death, especially the young teenagers. We also heard it from human rights organizations that the number is much higher because a lot of people are inside their houses with injuries because they're scared to go to the hospital. As soon as someone's going to the hospital, the security forces kidnap them.
Iranian witnesses have described burned out government buildings in central Tehran and smashed ATMs. They're also preparing for the possibility of a US attack. The president, Donald Trump, says help is on its way, but hasn't confirmed what form that help will take.
To all Iranian patriots, keep protesting, take over your institutions if possible, and save the name of the killers and the abusers that are abusing you. You're being very badly abused.
Iranian officials have once again warned the United States against taking action, blaming the US and Israel for the violence.
Rachel Hayter. Here in Australia, Noz Hosseini is the spokesperson for the Iranian Women's Association. She told me she and most other Iranian Australians haven't been able to contact family and friends in their homeland because of the internet blackout imposed last week.
they're highly distressed that they haven't been able to at least find out if their friends and family are dead or alive. There have been reports that since the internet blackout began on the 8th of January, an estimated 12 to 20,000 citizens have been killed by the regime. And these individuals were either bystanders or they were actually protesting on the streets against the repression.
So what are the fears that run through your mind when you think about friends and family back in Iran?
It's very confronting. Members of my family have received videos and messages from their loved ones in Iran and members of our extended family in Iran. Because of my active role here in the Iranian community, members of my family are sometimes a bit afraid to directly contact me or to directly provide me with video footage, but they contact other members of my family, and they were sending videos saying their goodbyes. They said, we're about to go out onto the streets. This may be our final conversation. This may be our last goodbye. So please don't tell me not to go out there. Please don't talk me out of it. But this is my role and responsibility as an Iranian to go out on the streets and fight, because if not me, who else?
Noz, tell us more about that thinking. That's a terrible thing to be thinking you might be going out to protest and never come home. What is the desperation like that prompts people to be so brave to go out and protest?
I believe that Iranians are put into this very difficult position where there is no other choice than that of bravery and that of courage. When you're living in an open prison where you don't have basic human rights, you don't have the right to freedom of speech or assembly or to walk down the street hand in hand with your partner unless you're married, when you don't have the right to choose your religion or to dress as you please, to wear a headscarf or not wear a headscarf, when you've been a prisoner or felt like a prisoner your whole life, there is no other option, there is no other choice but to risk everything and take to the streets along with other Iranians and fight for your freedom.
Noz Hosseini, the US President Donald Trump says help is on its way. What are you hoping is going to happen?
Over and over again, Western governments have emboldened the Iranian regime and allowed this regime to continue to indiscriminately massacre and kill and maim Iranians who have dared to stand up against it. Time and time again, we've called for Western governments to end this diplomacy and this policy of appeasement that's characterized the relationship between Western governments and the Iranian regime. And usually the response by Western governments has been to propose resolutions at a United Nations level and condemn the Iranian regime for its violation of human rights. But that hasn't stopped the regime. The regime's grown complacent and it continues to operate in the way that it has been operating since the 1979 revolution. Nothing will change unless Western governments push back and support the Iranian people against the Iranian regime that has held them hostage for all this time.
Do you think military intervention is going to be necessary?
I think that the Iranian people need to be supported to overthrow this regime. And that level of support is necessary for this regime to go. We need to be very realistic. This regime has grown emboldened and it's not going to go unless the people of Iran are supported against it.
If the help doesn't come for the protesters from Western nations, what are your worst fears about what might happen?
The regime, it will continue killing. It will continue its campaign of terror across the world and its campaign of terror towards Iranian people who are living inside Iran. And unless the international community doesn't respond and help Iranian protesters, nothing's going to change. Things are going to get worse. And all these deaths, all these executions, all these killings, where people have paid the ultimate price for standing up against this regime, will have been for nothing.
Noz Hosseini is the spokesperson for the Iranian Women's Association here in Australia. The former US President Bill Clinton is defying a subpoena to testify in a congressional investigation into the late convicted sex offender Jeffrey Epstein. His wife, the former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, is also refusing to front the committee, arguing the subpoenas aren't legally enforceable and that the process is aiming to send the couple to jail. Republican politicians are threatening to start contempt of Congress proceedings against them. Alexandra Humphreys has more.
The United States House of Representatives Oversight Committee had prepared to grill former President Bill Clinton, but instead it was met with an empty chair.
I'm going to note for the record that former President Clinton is not present.
The former president and his wife, former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton, defied subpoenas issued by the House of Representatives for them to testify in an investigation into Jeffrey Epstein. Mr. Clinton has never been accused of wrongdoing in connection with Jeffrey Epstein, but the pair were friends prior to Epstein's conviction for sex offences. Republican James Comer is chairman of the Oversight Committee.
He visited the White House. Jeffrey Epstein visited the White House 17 times while Bill Clinton was president. So no one's accusing Bill Clinton of any wrongdoing. We just have questions.
James Comer has pledged to begin contempt of Congress proceedings against the Clintons, who are Democrats, potentially setting in motion a complicated process that's rarely used. In a statement on social media, Hillary Clinton described the subpoenas as legally invalid and claimed the process was designed to land her and her husband in jail.
Every person has to decide when they have seen or had enough and are ready to fight for this country, its principles and its people, no matter the consequences. For us, now is that time.
She's promised the pair will forcefully defend themselves.
Yeah, when it gets to the Supreme Court, I think it's very unlikely that we'll see major penalties against the Clintons.
Wesley Widmire is a professor of international relations at the Australian National University.
This is not something where they're needed for a witness in a pending case or, you know, where there were some investigations with some Trump figures like Steve Bannon. This seems to me more like your traditional fishing expedition. I would think they'd pursue it up to the Supreme Court.
Do you think, I mean, there is so much interest in the Epstein case. Do you think there is a legitimate reason for this committee to want Bill Clinton to testify, or do you think it is more of a weaponization of the system?
I'm not an expert in the Epstein matter, but my hunch would be that there would be many witnesses who would have much more relevant information than Bill Clinton, you know, and many witnesses who would have much more relevant information than Donald Trump. So I'm not saying that Bill Clinton didn't have any information, but, you know, this seems like it's something politically motivated. Trump has gotten some of the Epstein stink on him. And, you know, this is maybe a case of, like you suggested, lawfare and whataboutism, you know, that Trump has been accused. And so now people are going after Clinton.
Multiple former presidents have voluntarily testified before Congress, but none has been compelled to do so. The committee does not intend to force President Donald Trump to testify.
Alexandra Humphreys. This is PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. You can hear all our programs live or later on the ABC Listen app. Criticism of the Albanese government's proposed hate speech and gun reform laws has continued today from both the opposition and a range of interest groups. The Prime Minister is hoping the legislation will be passed in just a couple of days when Parliament sits next week, but concerns the gun laws could target legal firearm holders and that the hate speech laws could stifle free speech persist, as Oliver Gordon reports.
Days out from Parliament resuming early to debate an omnibus bill containing changes to hate speech and gun laws, there are concerns from within the opposition. National Senator Bridget McKenzie says the proposed gun control laws could unfairly target law-abiding firearms owners. Well, National Senator Matt Canavan has told Channel 9 the section of the bill cracking down on hate speech goes too far.
They're the biggest attack on free speech since Robert Menzies tried to ban the Communist Party in the 1950s. This is not the way to deal with the tragic events of Bondi.
National's leader David Littleproud has singled out the Prime Minister, Anthony Albanese, in his attack on the bill, saying the two issues of guns and hate speech should be dealt with separately.
This is just a cynical attempt at petty, puerile politics, the university-style politics that Anthony Albanese wants to bring in because he's angry. He's angry with the country because we forced him into a royal commission that he didn't want to have, and this is how he reacts.
Meanwhile, Liberal backbenchers, including Andrew Hastie, have also raised concerns about some of the proposed changes. Opposing Labor's bill presents a tricky situation for Liberal leader Susan Lee. The coalition pushed the Prime Minister to recall Parliament following last year's Bondi terror attack, but is now accusing the government of rushing a legislative response. There's also criticism away from Canberra, with the Tasmanian and Northern Territory governments indicating they might not cooperate with the proposed gun buyback scheme. Here's Tasmanian Police Minister Felix Ellis.
We think it probably sends the wrong message to be lumping in responsible firearms owners with, you know, radical terrorists.
The legislation creates a new federal offence, making it illegal to publicly promote or incite racial hatred, where the conduct would cause a reasonable person to feel intimidated, harassed, or fear violence. But it also includes a defence if the person is solely quoting religious texts for teaching or discussion. Today, a key body representing Jewish Australians opposed that special exemption. Peter Wertheim from the Executive Council of Australian Jury.
Because it suggests that somehow one can intentionally promote racial hatred and do so intentionally within the bounds of religious doctrine. And we don't believe that to be true.
But Dr. Andre Obler from the Online Hate Prevention Institute believes the carve-out is reasonable.
So there's a carve-out for the use of religious texts in religious instruction. And that's quite reasonable. And it doesn't only affect, the Muslim religion. It affects all religions. There's plenty of passages that, for example, are quite homophobic, even in the Old Testament, so affecting both Judaism and Christianity. The issue is not teaching people about the text. The issue is using the text in order to incite hate in the community.
Dr. Obler agrees the complex legislation is being created at a rapid pace, but says the situation warrants it.
The laws are being pushed through very quickly. On the other hand, we should have had them 2 years ago.
Labor is continuing to consult over the new legislation, which will be introduced to Parliament in a special sitting next week.
Oliver Gordon reporting. Truck drivers of Indian heritage have told the ABC of the racist abuse they're being subjected to on Australia's roads, including from their fellow truckies. The nation faces a shortage of heavy vehicle drivers, and foreign-born drivers are increasingly filling the gap. Much of the racism they hear comes through the radios drivers use to communicate with each other. And a warning, this story from Gillian Area includes descriptions of racist and homophobic abuse.
The workday starts early for Pipal Singh. As a truck driver, he transports cars between Melbourne and Adelaide. But he and many other Indian-born drivers are subject to a daily barrage of racist abuse on their UHF radios.
If the accent is Aussie accent, that's acceptable. But if it's like Punjabi or Indian accent, you will face a lot of abuse for that, even if you're providing an update.
Heavy vehicle drivers use UHF radio to communicate with each other, often sharing information about roads and traffic. But it's become a soapbox for some of the most vile racial vilification imaginable.
There's a civil war coming. We're going to kill all the male Indians. We're going to drown all the kids. And we're going to sell all their women for slavery.
Then this thing is super black. You came over here and then you tried to snake all our jobs off us.
Wait till Pauline Hanson, Prime Minister, you Indian maggots, you'll be all sent home.
So why would anyone would turn this thing on? Yeah, there's no point.
To protect themselves, migrant drivers the ABC spoke to go against industry guidelines and turn their UHF radio off when possible. Some are too afraid to speak on it. Unlike social media, where accounts can be reported for racist comments, UHF radio users can remain anonymous, and there's no authority monitoring its airwaves. For another Indian-born driver, Jaswinder, who is an Australian citizen and father of two, the racial abuse went even further when he was making a fuel stop.
I was filling up a diesel in my truck and my missus called and I was on the phone with her.
Jaswinder was speaking to his wife in their native language Punjabi when another driver arrived and told him, "This is Australia, speak English."
And I simply replied to him that I'm not talking to you. If I need to talk to you, I'll speak in English. Then he walked away, went to pay his fuel, came back, and before sitting in his truck, he spat on me.
By the time Jaswinder could comprehend the fact he had been spat on, the driver was gone. Australia faces a chronic shortage of heavy vehicle drivers. It's estimated the country was short 28,000 drivers last year, and many foreign-born drivers are stepping into the industry. Sarah Anderson is a professor in workplace health, safety and well-being at Monash University and says more should be done to protect them.
So if you think about a driver who's already working in a stressful environment because they have tight time frames, often sleep deprivation and all those other aspects. The minute we add racism or aggression to a truck driver who needs attention to detail, who needs good decision making, we're actually impacting their ability to do their job safely.
While employers are responsible for minimising psychosocial risks to their workers, it's hard to hold people accountable when they don't know who is responsible for the abuse over the radio. Peak industry body, the Australian Trucking Association, says it's aware of increasing racism targeting Indian-born drivers on social media and at truck rest stops. It says the problem is partly caused by drivers from overseas being unfamiliar with Australian roads and a lack of quality training for those drivers. To address the problem, the association recommends operators take diversity and inclusion training and the industry offer more high-quality driver training. But until all those processes are strengthened, overseas-born drivers like Pipple and Jaswinder hope more Australian drivers will speak up against racial abuse.
I always say that the people who actually support Indian drivers, they should speak more. Because the racists, they are very, very less in number, but they're really loud.
That's truck driver Jaswinder, that report from Gillian Area. Well, Australian sport seems to have a new teenage superstar after a 16-year-old from Sydney scored his first goal in Italy's top football league this morning. The suitably named Antonio Arena is playing for AS Roma, one of the most powerful Italian clubs. His goal has fans wondering what lies ahead for the talented youngster and whether he'll pull on a Socceroos jersey one day. Kimberly Price filed this report.
In the 80th minute of a match between AS Roma and Torino, a 16-year-old from Australia stepped onto the field. And moments later, he made his mark in an extraordinary fashion.
Cross del brasiliano.
Proprio per Arena! Incredibile! Incredibile! Incredibile!
Antonio Arena had found the back of the net with his first touch for Serie A club AS Roma. He'd received a cross into the box and rose above the defenders to head the ball home.
16 anni! 16 anni! 2-2!
Antonio Arena may be playing top-tier football in Italy, but he was born and raised in Sydney. And for Sydney-based AS Roma fan Camillo Di Pietrantonio, watching the teenager score on the big stage was a great feeling.
It was pretty awesome to see him score, and not gonna lie, I was pretty jealous as well, because that's every young kid's dream. Not that I'm young anymore, but like when I was his age, 16, that's all I dreamt of. I dreamt of going and playing for Roma, and he's doing it, which is great.
As a lifelong fan and member of AS Roma Club Sydney, he believes Antonio Arena gives the club new hope.
We're in a bit of a transition season where we've just gotten a new coach. We haven't really been able to land one of those strikers that can guarantee us a lot of goals. But seeing Antonio score, like maybe we have the solution at home.
Freelance sports journalist Joey Lynch says it's not unusual for teenagers aiming for a professional career in football to head overseas.
Europe, of course, is the pinnacle of global football, and that means that there will inevitably be a pull and an attraction for youngsters looking to go over. And even for Italy, we have seen a number of Aussie youngsters head over there to try to develop and crack it into Serie A, one of the biggest and best leagues in the entire world.
As for representing a national side, Antonio Arena is eligible to play for either Australia or Italy. Joey Lynch says it's anyone's guess which one he'll choose, but he thinks Australian officials will be taking note.
He's very young. He has a lot of time before he's probably truly on the radar for a senior national team call-up. And at the moment, he's got the opportunity to just focus on his development and then one day, no doubt, well, he'll probably follow what the heart wants the most.
Sydney-based AS Roma fan Camillo Di Pietrantonio says he'd be happy to see Antonio Arena play for either country.
And I think if he was to choose Italy, it wouldn't mean he loves Australia any less. I think he should think about what country developed him football-wise, and he's already 16 years old and playing professionally, and he hasn't been in Italy long.
Despite Antonio Arena's impressive goal, AS Roma went down to Torino 3-2.
Kimberly Price reporting. Sounds like Antonio may face a big decision down the track. Thanks very much for joining me for PM. I'm Samantha Donovan. The podcast of the full program is available on the ABC Listen app. And that's where you'll find ABC News Daily with Sam Hawley each weekday morning too. We'll be back at the same time tomorrow. Good night.
Hi, it's Sam Hawley here, host of the ABC News Daily podcast. Board members quit, the chairman and then the director stepped down, and almost 200 participants pulled out. And so this year's Adelaide Writers' Week is no longer. Today, Dennis Muller from the Centre for Advancing Journalism at Melbourne Uni on the damage that's been done and what it means for free speech. Look for the ABC News Daily podcast on the ABC Listen app.